Blog Talk Radio.
All right, so let me start out by saying I was wrong. I know Seth's about to hit on it, so I'll say it flat out. Last night, with about 2 minutes left in the game, I said to Seth, would it be better if the Patriots let the Seahawks in here into the end zone? Not only did I say it then, but then I said it a minute and a half later, I said, would it be better if the Patriots let the Seahawks into the end zone so they would have more time on their hands for a touch to come back and get a touchdown? Little did I know, but I did predict accurately that it would be a pass. I just thought it would be a fade route. Oh my God, Pete Carroll, you are a great coach. You just made one absolutely dumb decision.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm assuming most of you know what we're talking about, or if not, I don't know. I guess you're under a rock. Seth Kamen, Sean Palmer, the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show on backsportsrage.com, Blog Talk Radio. And yeah, this is going to be the last show until the NFL draft, I guess, the NFL is pretty much all we're going to be talking about. The Super Bowl, Johnny Football, the Hall of Fame, where does Brady rank? Where does this game rank? Yada, yada, yada. Yeah, you couldn't give them the touchdown because unlike the Giants Super Bowl from 3 years ago, England can hold them to a field goal and the game is tied. That wasn't a situation 2 years ago, 3 years ago. That was why it made no sense. And it was interesting. I've read some stats about what's happened, and I'm not going to say it was a great call because obviously it wasn't. But what's one of the nice things about working from home, and sometimes you have the ESPN on and you listen to the real analysts, not the Chris Bermans or the whoever you want to call, the pseudo analysts. They were saying, from passes from the 1 yard line this year. Did you see the stat? 109 of them?
Yeah.
66 went for touchdowns, not one went for the interception. The pass least likely to be intercepted is that pass. That 3 yard slant, the 3 step slant. Marshawn Lynch, and I can give you all the statistics you want. One for 12 needing a yard in goal from the one. I mean, I would expect Lynch, considering he is probably the best short yardage runner in football. I'm kind of shocked by that stat. I would have preferred to see a run pass option with Russell Wilson, but in retrospect, I don't hate the call as much as I did when I watched it last night. And as the only person I think in a room of 20 that seemed to somehow ended up, and I have no idea why I was rooting for New England, but I was. I was shocked. I've never seen a room go so silent watching a football game, or very rarely.
Yeah, I really, look, I called the pass beforehand. I definitely didn't call the slant. And knowing the stats now, maybe that was the right call. I still don't think it was the right call. I don't care what the stats say. You throw the fade, which there is no way in God's green earth that's intercepted if you throw it the right way to the outside. I understand the call. I understand now the stats behind it. I understand that Marshawn Lynch was what, 1 for 12? What was the stat?
Yes, not good.
Not ungood. Understood. But how about taking 3 shots with him?
Yeah. As I said, in retrospect, I have a better understanding of why they did it. I'm not saying I agreed with it. I didn't agree with Belichick letting time run, which made absolutely no sense.
Well, I said that too.
It was a very good game. In certain ways, it was a great game. At some point, we'll probably talk about some of the other great Super Bowls that we've seen. And, it certainly can be in the discussion with some, probably not with others. But it was a fun night. My wonderful fiance, a little bit stressed, from it, running her first Super Bowl party in a while, and we had a good time.
Yeah, absolutely, and hats off to the Cayman Sphinx combination for throwing an excellent bash, of which I was invited to, and many thanks for that. And yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, using a line from Seth, four Super Bowls, right? Four now for him? Four,
yep.
Three, then the one. Yeah, four Super Bowls. Tying Tom Brady's idol, Joe Montana. And it gives more and more credence to Seth's argument that Tom Brady is the best quarterback of all time. And I'm not saying I agree. Not saying I agree. Not saying I disagree. I'm just saying it gives more credence to your argument. And you know what? He threw the ball did he throw it 50 times or almost 49, 50, right?
I think he ended up being 37 for 50. It may have been 36 for 49 for 328 and four touchdowns and two interceptions.
One of the quiet games for Tom Brady. I mean, it didn't seem like he was throwing that much.
No, it was an interesting game. You had the Patriots, who, for the most part, I thought was a better team in the first half. But Seattle scores that big touchdown in the last play of the half. Take control. And this is where, you know, I know Richard Sherman now is going to have Tommy John surgery. And Earl Thomas,
yep,
you know, is going for surgery. But you want to be considered one of the all-time great defenses, with the Purple People Eaters in Minnesota, with the Iron Curtain in Pittsburgh. You're up 10 points with 9 minutes to go. Team with no real running game and no number. I mean, Gronkowski, obviously a phenomenal tight end, but no real number one wideout. Although Edelman played like one last night. And you can't let up touchdowns in back to back. You know,
but Seth, let's understand what happened last night, okay?
And mm-hmm.
And you're right. If you want to be in that discussion, you probably can't give up 10 points or 9 points. I get it.
14.
So let's understand what happened, okay? In the second quarter, Jeremy Lain breaks his wrist.
Yes.
Who's their third cornerback? Last year it was Walter Thurman. He goes to the Giants. Now it's Jeremy Lain. Jeremy Lain breaks his wrist. Okay. In the third quarter, Cliff Avril, their number one pass rusher, goes out. I don't remember why he went out, but he did not return to the game. So
concussion.
Concussion. You have Earl Thomas, who's playing with one shoulder. And I'm not saying that's easier or harder to do at other positions, but when you're playing the safety and your goal is to defend passes above your head and to make tackles, legitimate tackles, which means using your shoulder, and then you have Richard Sherman, who plays a position where all you need to do is use your hands and your legs, nothing else, because that's what you use as a cornerback. And he needs probably the most reconstructive surgery on an elbow that can take place.
It's something I've never heard of for a football player before. Have you ever heard of that before?
I've heard of it for a baseball player, for even a non-pitcher. So I'm sure it could happen. I mean, it's torn UCL. It's ulnar collateral ligament. UCL. Yeah, ulnar collateral ligament. And I don't know how long that put the football player out, because it put Matt Wieters, who was a catcher, and granted a catcher uses his arm just as much as a pitcher throwing it back, it took him 10 months to come back. So who knows? But it's not like you have it. I mean, that would be saying, okay, so let's take out of the Iron Curtain Joe Green, Donnie Shell.
And Donnie, yeah, I got you.
I mean, that's not – this isn't Jack Youngblood. I mean, this isn't a broken leg that he's playing on, but you're taking out four of the top eight players. You can't really do that. I mean, you can't put the best defense. I think the best defense was last year, right?
yeah, they were the best defense last year. They were probably the they were the best defense this year, and they'll probably be the best defense next year.
Yep. But
it is, it's a tough blow to well, obviously it's, I mean, this is as bad a loss. This is as bad a loss, you know, as the Bills or, you know, to the Giants in 90, you know, where it was a 47 yard field goal into the wind is one thing. You know, this is second and goal from the one. They had, I think I was reading, they had a 99% chance to win the game. That was the, according to 538.com. 99%. And to lose it like that is just, it's mind-boggling. It's incredulous, whatever words you want to use. And, yeah, but, you know, to New England fans, I mean, you know, they were thinking after watching Javon Kurse make that ridiculous catch, you know, you think about it, they won the first three Super Bowls. They lose on the Tyree catch for all intents and purposes to an inferior Giants team. They lose in a lot of ways due to the Manningham catch to an inferior Giants team 4 years later. And they, while Seattle is not an inferior team by any stretch, to lose on a catch like that to Kurt by Kurse, that's a rough way to lose a game.
That was Brady's WTF moment. I mean, if you looked at him, it was quite funny seeing him watch that on the scoreboard. But it, look, the ball bounces certain ways, right? I mean, the immaculate reception, you kind of look and you go, there's no way that could happen, and it does. I mean, football is a great sport because of things that happen that way. So, all in all, a fantastic game. I mean,
yeah. Where do you put this when you think of the great Super Bowl games?
Well, I think that it's important for me because obviously I wasn't alive when the Colts won on the field goal, right? Jim O'Brien's field goal. I believe
that was supposedly a horrible game, though. When you look at the ratings of the 71, when you look at the rate at the reviews of that game, it's considered one of the worst played games in the history of the Super Bowl.
Okay.
So,
look, I haven't read any of these. I'm just saying that there are games that existed before we were alive, and
that
before we remember. So, I mean, that would be one that was obviously there was some suspense because it was one on a field goal with time running down. So, I mean, you have that one. The Giants Super Bowl. Now, the first two Super Bowls that I really remember are the Giants and the Bears. And the Bears was a horrible Super Bowl. So, I mean,
yes.
so you're putting the Giants up there, the Giants versus Denver, and then the Giants versus
Buffalo.
Then you have all those 49er games, which to me, except for the one against Cincinnati, were horrendous.
Yes.
Then you have the Cowboy games, which were horrendous.
Yes.
I mean, unless you're a Cowboy fan, and then they were awesome. So, you have the Green Bay game against the Patriots.
Nothing special.
Then you have Denver's game against Green Bay. That was a good game.
That was.
That was a very good game. So I put that in the pantheon of good games. And I think you and I can only go from like 1983 on.
Yeah, I agree. And there's nothing prior. There's nothing in the 80s. Really, which would put you at that level, which we would put at that level. I agree on Green Bay, Denver, Atlanta. Green Bay wasn't Atlanta. Denver wasn't very good.
No,
the Ravens Giants wasn't very good. Tampa Bay, yeah, well, Tampa Bay Raiders wasn't very good. I may be skipping one or two around here, but. You know, the New England games, the New England Carolina game was very good. The New England Rams game was interesting.
Wait, but you're forgetting one. St. Louis and Tennessee.
Great fourth quarter.
Yes.
Not a great game, but great fourth quarter. You know,
yeah, if you're looking at the best endings of a game, I put this in the top three. You could actually top four. You can put them in any order you want between Scott Norwood, Adam Vinatieri when you beat the Rams, this one, and John Taylor.
How about Kevin Dyson?
No, because Kevin Dyson never scored.
Right. He got stopped at the one, and that's where the game ended.
I thought he got stopped at the two, actually. But okay.
Okay. Really?
I agree. I still don't put that in there. I put those four, maybe Nyssen being a fifth, but those four. And quite frankly, I think the most suspense I ever had in a Super Bowl was the Giants or was the 49ers against Cincinnati, which I remember as a great game. Now, granted, I was 13. So,
well, to me, the best Super Bowl that I can remember, I'd say the top three. This one may be number three. Would be the Giants and Bills and the Steelers Cardinals. The Steelers Cardinals was sensational.
Oh, yes, it was. You're absolutely correct.
Santonio, James Harrison, the 105-yard touchdown return, and kind of a very contrarian game to this one where you had the two big favorites made it to the Super Bowl. In that one, you had Pittsburgh, who was a favorite, and Arizona, who was one of the worst. I remember saying that's one of the worst teams I've ever seen make the playoffs. One of my more profound picks, to say the least.
Until this year, brilliantly.
Yeah, that's a little bit unfair, though. that's a team. That team was led by Kurt Warner. This team was led, might as well have been led by Kurt Warner's son, for the last four games of the season, and had no chance once they made the playoffs. That was a great game. The James Harrison play is probably the greatest play in the history of the Super Bowl. The Santonio Holmes catch, Larry Fitzgerald at that time, probably the best receiver in football, making the 80-yard bomb with 2 minutes to go. There have been a lot of really good games. And, we're just mentioning a few. The New England games are not that exciting. Indy New Orleans was okay. Indy Chicago was terrible. Green Bay, Pittsburgh was okay. So it's, there are games that are exciting and games that are, bleh. Last night was certainly exciting.
Absolutely. All right. So Brady's the MVP. I can't see giving it to anybody else. That's the issue for me. Like, he had a very quiet 50 passes to me.
The only other guy I could see giving it to is Edelman. Edelman had 11 catches. Somehow Shane Vereen had 11 catches. I had no idea. Gronkowski is still probably the biggest matchup nightmare in the NFL. Like him, dislike him. He's right there. And, the reality is when you look at the team, and when you think of the great quarterbacks of all time, and I guess you kind of have to almost put it in who we've seen. It's hard for me to quote, to say Otto Graham because I never saw him, or Staubach because I never saw him. He's there. Like him, dislike him, and I know most people dislike him. For some reason, I like him. I don't know why. I shouldn't. But, to me, he's had less talent surrounding him as a great quarterback, except for Marino, than any of the other quarterbacks in that pantheon. And to go to six Super Bowls and not be done yet is just an unbelievable accomplishment.
I agree. I mean, he probably is the best coach in football history.
Yes, but he's a defensive coach. He's not, Bill, Montana is probably considered the greatest of all time. Montana has the greatest wideout of all time. Not even really a discussion point. Potentially the best offensive mind as a quarterback of all time. He's certainly up there.
Disagree with the offensive line comment.
Offensive mind, not offensive line.
Okay, fair enough.
Roger Craig. In the second Super Bowl, had 1,000 yards rushing, 1,000 yards receiving. In that season, which I don't believe has been done since. And they had better talent.
Falk. Marshall Falk did it.
Did Falk do 1,000 and 1,000?
Yes, he absolutely did.
Okay.
It's hard to do. I get that. It's hard to do.
Yeah. So, I mean, to me, you know, and this has been a discussion, you know, we've discussed Brady versus Manning. And Manning had, you know, to me, more offensive talent. And had a Hall of Fame coach eventually in Tony Dungy, probably most likely. And, you know, it's, you know, whatever, to me, I think he is now, in my mind, the greatest. And this shocks me to say this. I think he's the greatest quarterback of all time. Or the greatest quarterback of my lifetime.
Well, you just brought up the Hall of Fame, and I think that this is a great segue to the Hall of Fame. So the Hall of Fame, the NFL Hall of Fame does things a little bit differently. They will always elect four players. Always. Now, my question to you, Seth, does that make it the Hall of Very Good? Because to me, I think it does. I think it absolutely makes it the Hall of Very Good. There are more players, but at the same time, you have to elect at least four of them every single year.
Well, again, to elect four in a given year when you have, what is it, 50 players per team, whatever it is, 32 players. I don't know. It may not be the Hall of Very Good versus the Hall of Fame. It's the Hall of Very, 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 Very Good. You know, but I did see some names in there which I wouldn't have thought of as Hall of Fame players, and they seem to be gaining more and more credibility in this given year.
Right.
So
Junior Seau to me is the first team Hall of Fame, no question asked.
No discussion. Agreed.
No discussion. In fact, it said Peter King said it took 7 minutes for them to decide that he was a Hall of Famer. I'm surprised it took that long, unless it took 7 minutes to poll 44 people.
That could very well be it.
Okay, Jerome Bettis. So here's one of mine that I'm thinking is in the Hall of Very, Very, Very Good.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt as well. I would not have seen him. You know, great player, obviously. I don't know if I see him as a Hall of Famer. You know, wonderful staff. I don't know. Not really a Hall of Famer to me.
I don't think he ever led the league in rushing.
I agree.
I don't believe so. He wasn't a great pass catcher. He was not a very good blocker.
Especially considering how big he was.
And he played on some teams that just kept running the ball. I think his average, and I don't have it in front of me, I might be able to look this up. I don't think his average was very good. I mean, that he carried the ball. You got a calculator out?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Divide 13,662. Divided by 3479.
.9.
All right. That's not a Hall of Famer to me.
No.
Not at all. I
agree.
The equivalent of Don Sutton. So he had 1,362 yards, 662 yards, 91 touchdowns in 13 seasons. So that's what? About 6 touchdowns a season? Maybe 7. 7 touchdowns. Exactly 7 touchdowns a season. And he won a Super Bowl, and he rushed for 1,000 yards in 8 of his seasons. 1,000 yards really is not that big of a deal anymore.
It's 65 yards a game. Not really that. Yeah, not, you know, it's not a stat really worthy of Hall of Fame status.
Wait, he averaged 65 yards a game?
No, that's what 1,000 yards is, for all intents and purposes.
Do this for me. Do 13 times 16.
Okay, I could 208, I think. Let me get
okay. So now do 13,662. No, it's not 208. Is it 208?
I don't know. I have to get the calculator out.
Yeah, 13,662 divided by 208.
Okay.
That can't be right. That's going to be like 200.
I don't know what you're asking, so.
So in 13 seasons, he played in 16 games every season, give or take. Okay? I want to see how many yards per year, per game he had. So if he had 13 seasons times 6 years, 13 seasons times 16 games. Is 107, I think it's 178.
No, it's not.
I'm asking.
This is why you're a lawyer.
Hold on. I have a calculator on here somewhere.
Okay. I'm trying to bring it up a calculator on this stupid Windows 8.1. What a pain in the ass this thing is.
Anyway, it's under 100 yards. I bet you it's under 100 yards. Anyway, so he's number two. Number three is the number one dispute that my man, the Bate Isles, and I have had for now 3 or 4 years. Tim Brown, who I do not view as a Hall of Famer. He does. I think, Seth, you do as well.
I do.
He retired with the third most catches in the NFL history. He caught 1,094 passes for 1,494 yards, so that's over 10 yards a catch, and 100 touchdowns in 17 years. He also had over 5,000 yards, return yards. Now, that's the thing that sold Peter King. Does that sell you?
I think when you're at that point, we have talked about this, that combination of, Andre Reed, Tim Brown, and I'm forgetting who the receiver, I guess Chris Carter, were the three wideouts that we've been discussing. Now all three of them have been inducted.
Yep, and Marvin Harrison's next, along with Terrell Owens.
Right, they'll be next year. And to me, I would have Carter 1, Brown 2, Reed 3. Carter played best hands possibly of all time. You know, Reed was a great receiver and certainly a definitive all pro and a number one, but he may not have been one of the two most valuable people on his offense. Tim Brown had nobody. You look at name a great quarterback other than 2 years with Rich Gannon that Tim Brown played with. Name a great running back other than when Bo Jackson was healthy that Tim Brown
Marcus
played
Allen.
With.
Marcus Allen.
He was not in his prime by that point. Maybe his first 2 or 3 years. But throughout, Marcus Allen was his best year, I think, was his second year. And Allen by 89-90 was gone. So throughout the 90s and the early 2000s, Tim Brown had nobody, and he was the sole person on that team, the sole threat. And to end up with those yards in that career, I think I have him very much on the border, but I would probably lean towards having him in. Now, would I have had him in over Marvin Harrison? No, I think Marvin Harrison was a better wideout. But Harrison will get in, and Harrison's always going to be an interesting situation going forward because of because of what's happened since his retirement. But in my mind, it's a close call, but I would go with him in. Now, did you like Andre Reed better than him as a receiver?
No, absolutely not. I like Tim Brown better than him. I think Tim Brown did more just because he, even more so, just because of his return yards. I mean, I'll just give him that. Okay, so let's move on. Charles Haley, an interesting character, first and only person to have 5 rings. And so he makes the Hall of Fame. Is he the Frank Frassetti of the NFL?
He's hung around long enough, played on great teams, was a solid contributor. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Never struck me as the best at his, the best at his position at any given time. Again, that's more my baseball criteria. I'm not quite sure if the football runs with it in the same way. He seemed to be more thought of highly by people within the football world than outside of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, they're the ones voting because it's a different vote. For the NFL, it's 44 people. That's it. are the only people that vote. So he's obviously a little bit higher thought of there than either Seth or myself. Okay, a guy that I really like and I really think that deserves it, and I know there's no way to figure out how to do this, right? How to say whether this guy is in.
If you're talking about Will Shields.
I absolutely am Will Shields.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm not a scout. You know, I know when I've seen great offensive linemen. I'm an NFC East guy. I saw Larry Allen in his prime. Larry Allen in his prime was a great offensive lineman.
Yes.
Willie Roaf was a great offensive lineman. You know, Will Shields was in Kansas City for, I think, his entire career, or if not very, very close to that. You know, how often were you watching Kansas City living in New York, to be honest? And when you were watching Kansas City, were you watching the offensive line?
Well, but here's the way I view offensive linemen, and I kind of view all players this way. So you have the Pro Bowl, right, which to me doesn't mean jack, because some of it is fan voting, some of it is player voting. There's a lot of politics that go on and on about it. The one thing that there is less and less politics about is the All-Pro votes. And the All-Pro votes are voted by the players. And if they're going to say that this guy was the best, how do you not agree with them, is my take on it. So if you have Will Shields was an All-Pro, I think, for 13 years as an offensive guard. 13 years, that's over a decade. If he's the best player according to the players, then to me, he's the best player. And he's it. It's the only way I look at it. Okay, so the fifth guy, and I'm missing this. Who am I missing for number five?
Mick Tinglehoff, I believe. But anyway,
no, there were five current guys. Then there was Minglehoff, Polian, and I just...
Ron Wolf.
And Ron Wolf, but there was a fifth close to active player. Hold on. I had it up a second ago. I'm sorry, everybody. I went a little bit too fast, too far, trying to figure this out. Here we go.
We got four.
You got five. Okay, so you're right. Mick Tinglehoff, I have no opinion on. I can't begin to have an opinion on him.
Nope.
So this year they decided on, because of the backlog for contributor candidates, every other year they'd have contributor candidates that would be voted on a thumbs up, thumbs down. 80% of the electorate, which is 44 people, would need to say yes. And if you're going to start that, Ron Wolf and Bill Polian are a hell of a start to me.
Yeah, Ron Wolf, great, you know, successful everywhere he went. You know, most famous for building Green Bay, two big moves, trading for a third-string quarterback from Atlanta named Brett Favre, and somehow convincing Reggie White, who could have gone to any team in the country, to come up to Green Bay. Put that team in winning a Super Bowl. They went to another one. You know, extraordinary, you know, solid guy. Sorry.
You know, Seth, there's two things that I learned about Ron Wolf yesterday. Number one, he was the lead scout for the Raiders during Kenny Stabler and Jim Plunkett, and he recommended Plunkett be signed by Al Davis. That's pretty impressive in its own right when Plunkett was released. That's number one. Number two, do you know the year before Reggie White went to Green Bay, he had said in an interview when asked about free agency, "I will go anywhere but Green Bay."
I had never heard that.
Signed with Green Bay. So just based on that, that's incredible. So, and then Bill Polian, who builds championship teams like it's nobody's business, starting with, well, at least going to the Super Bowl teams, starting with the Bills first, then Carolina, and built the Terry Collins going to the Super Bowl against the Patriots, and then, the Jake Delhomme going to the Super Bowl against the Patriots, and then finishing up with his Super Bowl win with Peyton Manning and the Colts.
And so let's kind of look forward to, and I think if I remember correctly, Pullman was like a 9-time executive, some ridiculous number. And,
he set the standard.
And so who are we looking at for 2016?
So the guys that, and I'm sure we'll talk about this a little bit more next year as well, the guys that missed out this year, 6 through 10, because remember, they have to narrow it down from 10 to 5. So the guys that missed out, 6 through 10, Kevin Green, who's getting more and more pub as the years go on, and I don't see why, but not my call. Kurt Warner, who I was actually surprised did not get in this year, although I don't think he deserves it. Orlando Pace, who to me is the best offensive lineman that I've ever seen. Marvin Harrison and Tony Dungy. We've discussed Marvin Harrison, and you spoke about Tony Dungy before, who I think gets in at some point. The first five that were eliminated of the original 15 were Don Coryell of the old San Diego Chargers, who passed away, I think, 2 years ago. Jimmy Johnson, famed coach of both the Dallas Cowboys and the Miami Dolphins. Morton Anderson, kicker, who leads the history in points and field goals. Running back Terrell Davis.
He leads the history in points?
Wow, that has the most points in NFL history. Thank you.
Wow.
Running back Terrell Davis, who had a very short but amazing career, and safety John Lynch. Starting next year, the top first-year eligibles are Brett Favre, who I think is pretty much a slam dunk. Terrell Owens, who to me would be a slam dunk. I'm not sure about everybody else, but certainly to me. And guard Alan Faneca, who should eventually get it.
Yeah, I guess the only other name you'd put in there would be Quentin Portis. But, you know, it's obviously a level below. And, you know, this is where you're going to have, to have a Terrell Owens, Marvin Harrison duo making it would be, you know, that's one of the best wide receiving crews you could ever ask for. Tony Dungy.
Also, get your popcorn ready for that speech.
Yeah, of course. But and then in 2017, you know, there's a few other interesting ones. LaDainian Tomlinson, Brian Dawkins, Hines Ward, Jason Taylor, Donovan McNabb.
I think you might see two safeties in that with Dawkins and Lynch going in at the same time as well.
Yeah. That'll be an interesting year because those are a lot of guys on the border. I mean, to me, Tomlinson is a Hall of Famer. Ward is a borderline. Dawkins is a borderline. I don't think McNabb is a Hall of Famer. I think he's Hall of very, very good.
Well, yeah, okay, so let's put that to the test. I know we've talked about this a little bit, but let's extrapolate a little bit. Kurt Warner versus Donovan McNabb. Are either one a Hall of Famer to you? And if so, why is one and not the other?
The typical argument of your shorter but better prime. Kurt Warner had almost a Koufaxian 6-year span where he came out of nowhere. Now Koufax didn't quite come out of nowhere, but it was an unexpected run, to say the least. Warner's story is one of the greatest of all time. He was the grocery shelf guy at a grocery store in Iowa, playing arena football, somehow makes the Rams as a backup quarterback to Trent Green. Green tears his elbow, I think, up and is out for the year. And all he does is win the MVP and win the Super Bowl. He would go to the Super Bowl two more times, once with the Rams and a team that probably should have beaten the Patriots. And with the Cardinals, kind of almost coming out of retirement. I don't know if it was retirement, but just really coming out of, like, he was playing with the Giants, and playing with the Giants at that point was like being in retirement. And leading that team to the Super Bowl, where they would lose, you know, in my mind, as I said earlier, probably one of the two or three greatest Super Bowls I've ever seen. McNabb was very, very good for a very long time. The issue with McNabb was he was not considered a great clutch player, for better or for worse. He also really had much less help from a receiving standpoint. He had 2 years of Terrell Owens, 1 year of Terrell Owens really at his best, and really had no other great receivers that I can think of. So it's a hard thing to gauge. I would rather have 8 years of six years of Sandy Koufax than 12 years of Don Sutton. So I think I would go, if I was going to take one of them, I would take Warner. I don't think I would take either, though.
Okay, and I think Terrell Davis is the same concept, right?
Yeah.
So it's a lot, but not sure either one belongs. And would you take 6 years of, really, it's like 4 years of Terrell Davis, right? He never even got to six.
He played, I think, for six, but I think he turned great in his second or third year, though.
All right, so would you take 4 years of Terrell Davis over 13 years of Jerome Bettis?
It depends. As a Hall of Famer, I would take neither. Player, I would probably rather have 13 years of Bettis, because I think I just would. 4 years is just not enough time period to establish yourself in that regard. We're kind of crushing on Bettis a little bit, but you know, we both said it may be a very, very good player. It's a bastion of what do you consider a Hall of Famer? Is it the Hall of Great or the Hall of Very Good? And that just depends on how you view Hall of Fames.
And the funny thing is, I view baseball a lot more liberally than I view football for some reason. Maybe it's because baseball is my favorite sport, and I'm a little bit more biased towards the statistics I am in football, but I think there's much more room for compiling in football than there is in baseball.
That's probably true. Baseball, you have a Johnny Damon who ended up with, 2,900 hits? Something like
right.
that? Harold Baines, 2,800 hits. These are not people that I think most of us would consider Hall of Famers. NFL, it's a little bit, I guess in some regards from a wideout perspective, it's kind of getting to that level where everyone has so many catches. You have the Isaac Pruses, you have the Torrey Holt, the Jimmy Smiths, who have these statistics. And it's kind of playing it, you have to look and say, okay, who's the greatest that I've seen and who warrants that? Terrell Owens, my whole thing with baseball, and you know this, is was this guy the best at his position at any given point?
Yeah.
Terrell Owens was. Chris Carter,
yeah.
You can make the debate other than Jerry Rice. And Jerry Rice was in a planet, by himself. Or him and Michael, you can make that argument. I can never make that argument that Donovan McNabb was the best quarterback in football. I don't think. Maybe there was 1 year, but I don't think so.
Okay, so let's go from the best in football to one of the worst quarterbacks this year, who right now is maybe playing on the rehab team?
Yeah, I find is this me or is this just convenient? I mean, I don't know whether to take this seriously or not. I'll be honest with you. Johnny Manziel, the day after the Super Bowl, admits himself into rehab. This couldn't have been done, when the timing wasn't was opportune. Apparently, he kind of went on. I heard he went on a party bus down to the rehab center. I mean. I'm not sure if he's doing it for whether number one, it's legitimately needed. And again, I have no idea whether it is or it's not. Or number two, if he's doing it just to try to save some face. So, if it's legit, then I wish him the best. You wish him the best. And hopefully he can salvage, something from the extraordinarily disappointing rookie year. But, call me a little incredulous.
Okay, so I will. You're incredulous.
Thank you.
But the fact is, if it works, and I don't care if it's opportune or not, if it works and he actually has a problem, more power to him. Yes? We agree with that?
Yeah.
Okay. So, from him to Warren Sapp.
Warren Sapp going the Greg Anthony, Eugene Robinson route.
Yeah, no kidding.
Geez, man, arrested in Arizona for soliciting a prostitute. Oh, Warren, is this going to be on the U part 3 on the 30 for 30s?
Probably awesome. So anyway, he was suspended by the NFL Network. I think it was suspended. I don't think he was fired.
Yeah, but I mean, you're suspending someone after the Super Bowl. What exactly does that mean? That's like suspending a college football player for spring practice. What does that mean?
Yeah.
Well, I guess we'll see if he's back on the team next year, right?
Yeah, I'm not getting in-depth draft analysis from Sapp. So I'm, even at his best, I'm not going to hear from him for another 6 months anyway. And, well, I don't really watch him, so I wouldn't hear from him in general. You know, we'll see what happens. So, I mean, you know, the football year is finally done. And great Super Bowl, but admittedly not a great year for the NFL. You know, Roger Goodell, what was the big, you know, supposedly he was supposed, you know, he was saying how easy it is for people to reach him and talk to him. And once again, you know, kind of going behind the shadows, behind the mirror, whatever you want to call it. You know, he now has kind of a, you know, he's raised the ire of Robert Kraft. You don't want to do that. You know, Kraft was one of the biggest allies he had, and it's going to be a very, very trying year for Mr. Goodell going, I think, going forward.
So do you think he keeps his job?
I do. I don't think I don't think easily, but it does look, you know, but he is, but I think he will keep his job, and I think he'll have the Bill Simmons of the world and all the other media critics absolutely crushing him for it.
Well, that's probably true. And I really think it does depend on what happens with Deflategate and how he handles that. Because if he tries to sweep that under the rug, the same way he did with Spygate, there's going to be a lot of angry people, myself included.
Well, that's also because you're a bitter Jets fan and hate the Patriots. I really don't quite grasp Deflategate being that big of a deal. I don't think it is. I don't see this as a huge deal. I haven't. I think it was a controversy that in a lot of ways was extrapolated because you're on a 24/7 sports media cycle for this during the Super Bowl. And here it is. And I don't think it was that big of a deal. I really don't. You know, Jeff Blake, the ex-quarterback from the Bengals, has said this happens all the time. This is nothing new. This is pretty much, he called it out as BS. So that's my feeling on it.
And that's the word from Seth Kamens, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, maybe that's what we should rename the show. It has been 3 years. We may need a name change.
Okay.
Anyone has an idea for a name change, call in at 760-283-0846.
For the next 12 minutes.
There
and
you
we'll
go.
Be back next week. We'll talk just so you know a little bit more about the hockey. Hopefully we'll get Mr. Keegan Reed on, because it'll be around the NHL.
You're not calling him Sir Keegan? Has he lost his title?
No. When he comes on, I will be happily calling him Sir Keegan. You only need to say Sir to his face or to his voice. Anyway. But anyway, we'll be having Sir Keegan Reed on, hopefully next week. We do need to get our favorite Bleacher Report reporter on soon. We have been amiss in not having him on in a while.
I will reach out. Sean?
Yeah, can you work on that for us?
Yeah. It's a tough battle, but someone has to do it. Maybe
okay.
We'll even have our esteemed leader from backsportspage.com, Mr. Zelia, come on and talk a little bit of NBA and talk about what's going on with the site. There's a lot of stuff going, a lot of interesting stuff, that are going on, and we'll see what happens with that. So we got about 10 minutes left. I mean, is there any other real major football? It's been a football weekend, obviously. I guess the other big news in the sports world this week, well, there's a little bit of MMA, I know we don't really talk about, but the interesting Floyd Mayweather running into Manny Pacquiao at a Miami Heat game. And apparently is the first time they've ever met in person. And they went back and spoke for 2 hours at his hotel, seeing if some of the details could be ironed out. And all the people related to both parties now think a deal is going to be done. Sean, why don't you ask me if I think a deal is going to be done between these two fighters?
I know you don't.
No, I don't.
And if you did,
would be on her birthday, which would be birthday weekend, which would be awesome.
No, because I'm doing the 5-borough bike ride the next morning, so it wouldn't be that great. But it would be. I mean, this is it's a fight that unfortunately should have happened 5 years ago. I'm not sure either of them are still in their prime or still. I mean, they're still top five fighters. Pacquiao has lost two fights in the last 8 years. One was on a very, very disputed decision, which he redeemed in a rematch later on against Tim Bradley. The other was against Juan Manuel Marquez, where he was going to knock him out. It just got caught on a one-punch knockout. Mayweather has not looked great his last few fights, fighting limited but powerful slugger Marcos Maidana. He did look great against Canelo Alvarez about a year and a half ago. So I think I don't think this fight is ever going to happen. And the shame of it is, this is Mayweather's legacy that's getting hit, not really Pacquiao's. He's fought all the great fighters coming in from 108 pounds to 154. Unfortunately, Mayweather has never fought a truly great fighter in his prime. And that's why when you hear the real knowledgeable boxing writers, nobody has him ranked as highly as probably as he would like. You know, we'll see what happens with that.
Before we talk about MMA, Sean just tunes out. I'll just tell you that flat out.
That was
no
boxing,
idea what or boxing. They're one and the same to me. It does not matter. But obviously, Seth is the proponent. He is definitely the knowledgeable one on this issue, and I'm sure glad to give him that free rein in what he would like to talk about. So
I guess I will. Well, thank you, and I will give you the next 5 minutes to talk about something I know you have a great affinity for. What do you say?
I thought we were going to talk about tennis.
You want to talk about tennis? I'll happily talk. I was going to be my end of, Novak Djokovic beating Andy Murray, Serena Williams beating Maria Sharapova. This is a recording. Nothing really changes.
Yeah, but there's no Federer.
Federer got knocked out in the second round by Andreas Seppi, I believe, and Rafi Nadal got knocked out by Thomas Berdych in the quarters.
And that's our tennis update.
Yeah, it's kind of hard when the big matches start at 2:00 in the morning. I'm a bit of an insomniac, but I'm not that bad. I wanted to talk about what your thoughts were of Keith Law, the minor league baseball expert from ESPN. He did his top 100 ratings. I think Byron Buxton was one, and Chris Bryant were 1-2 or 2-1 respectively. Your Mets were ranked number 3 or number 4. And, you know, what were your thoughts? You're a minor league baseball guy.
Well, as a Mets fan, I absolutely love seeing my team at number 4 because it means we actually have something to look forward to this year. The top 100 comes out every year. Keith Law is probably the preeminent for minor league talent. And former assistant GM for the Toronto Blue Jays, and one of the snarkiest guys I've ever read, and I like it. Seth does not, and that's okay.
I do read him though.
You do? Okay.
Yes.
So I really enjoy reading that stuff, and he came out with the Mets at number 4. I think the Yankees were like 15, 16. The Tigers were last, which I always find funny because the Tigers are last because they've been in the playoffs the last 5 years. And in order to gain good talent, sometimes you have to suck. And the Tigers haven't sucked in a while. So number 9 is the Red Sox. Number 5 is the Red Sox. And you're kind of like, well, the Red Sox won a World Series last year. Yeah, they did. 2 years ago. Yeah, they did. But 2 out of the last 4 years? They sucked, so they get good prospects. So I really, really think that you should read it if you're interested in the younger talent. He's very good. He's a very good writer. He writes very well for individual teams as well, but it's behind the Insider subscription. It is the only reason I get Insider, except that Seth wants to get my Insider stuff. But no, I think you got your own this time, right?
I've had my own for years.
Oh, that's
right. I used yours for like 3 months.
Oh, I think. So anyway, so definitely read it if you're interested in your team. So we got the last 5 minutes. Zara used your 5 minutes, right? That's what you just told me. I used your 5 minute ending.
Nah. Either way, go. Go for it.
So
yeah, you got two. Hopefully you got 2 minutes. I got two. Go.
Hopefully, we're going to have Blog Talk Radio and Back Sports Page at the NBA All-Star Game, which is coming up in 2 weeks on Valentine's Day weekend. I'm still trying to figure out why they would ever have it on Valentine's Day weekend, but they are. And Damian Lillard will not be there. And he may be the best player, definitely the best player this year not to get an All-Star berth, but he may be, have the best first half of any player in history not to get an All-Star berth. And I find that very weird because it once again proves the iniquity, yes, iniquity, of the Eastern Conference versus the Western Conference and how bad the East is. Because there are players on the East that wouldn't even ride the bench of this All-Star team. But yet, this is just another way that everything is cyclical. Now, I do have one question for you, Mr. Cambridge.
Yes.
What do you think Adam Silver would have said if he was in Roger Goodell's shoes and Deflategate came about?
The problem is, I don't think you could suspend Brady. Without definitive proof, I don't think you could suspend Brady for the Super Bowl. I don't know. I think he probably would have. I don't know. I think he would have probably stated that it was a minor, you know. I don't think he would have made a big deal about it. I think Silver seems to have a better feel for what's truly important in a sport, in the games, than Goodell does. You know, Goodell thinking that two games is suitable for Ray Rice, telling him that he was going to get two games and then suspending him for the season. Andre, you know, Peterson, the same thing. I don't know. I have such a little feeling when it comes to Deflategate. I really don't know. I shouldn't even say.
All right.
What do you feel?
You're up.
No, I want to hear your opinion.
What's that?
I want to hear your opinion.
Oh, I think Adam Silver would have said this will be over. We got the Deflategate stuff 2 weeks ago. The investigation will be over in a week and a half. We'll have a decision on Wednesday before the Super Bowl. Done.
Could very well have been. And that's why Adam Silver is thought of so highly and Roger Goodell is, well, not. Minute and a half to go. Why don't you ask, you can cover your ears, Sean. A rare MMA. The greatest fighter in the history of mixed martial arts. It's pretty much consensus, just like Jerry Rice is the best receiver in history. Wayne Gretzky is probably the best hockey player of all time. Anderson Silva is the best best fighter in the history of mixed martial arts, coming back from a broken leg, and his first fight and his first win in 2 years beating Nick Diaz. Wasn't that exciting? Diaz, just a strange guy and a weird. But it was good to see him back. And at age 40, it'll be interesting to see if he can make one more championship run and get a rematch against Chris Weidman, the only person who's really owned him in his career. We got about 40 seconds left. Thanks to everybody who came last night. It was a really good time. Next week should be, you know, next week we'll do some NBA talk, some NHL talk. And luckily for my fiance, she won't have to overhear me talking about football until the draft, which is several months away. So
college basketball.
We go. College basketball as well. For Sean Palmer, this is Seth Kamen, the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show on backsportspage.com from Blog Talk Radio. Talk to you next week, everybody.
See ya.